From New York City, the world-famous Comedy Cellar presents Live from America Podcast. Live from America Podcast. With Noam Dorman and Hatem Gabber. Live from America Podcast. Where the top experts in the world and the best comics in the nation get together weekly to discuss today's issues as they cover news, culture, politics, comedy, and more with an equal part of knowledge and comedy. And now, here are your hosts, Hatem Gabber and Noam Dorman.
The odds of having the same birthday were 1 out of 365 or 1 out of 366 and if we're born in a leap year. But go ahead.
Welcome to Live from America Podcast. This was Noam. He's back finally. Oh my God. The podcast without him, everybody was talking. Everybody had a chance to say what they want. No, it's I don't like it when he's not here. Well, he's back. And we were just talking about his birthday, which was last the 17th. Sunday. And it turns out that's also Christiana's birthday.
Yeah.
First, let me introduce our guest. Comedian Christiana Jackson is back. One of my favorite. Seema Iyer, she's a lawyer and journalist. And she was, I think, one of our very, very, very first guests when we first started this podcast.
It's nice to be back. It's nice to be back. And happy belated birthday, Christiana.
Thank you.
And Norm.
That's
sorry,
okay. You can leave me out. That's okay.
But I want to say something to Noam because I was at his birthday party and Christian, but it's just, it was such a beautiful party where we went to Noam's birthday party. And to me, I always have that observation. I don't know if you guys agree with me, but I always judge a person by how long he's been friends with people. Like when I see somebody that been friends with somebody for like 10 years, 20 years, I was like, that's a good man. A good woman, when you have somebody that everybody around them is just, like maybe one or two that been for a few years and the rest are new. Mm. I don't know. I was like, I judge people by that. I was in a room with, I don't know how many people were there, maybe 30, maybe more. And every single person there knew Noam for more than 10 years, wow. 20 years. So like one of them had Noam since he was three. Yeah. That's wow. The least. Yeah. And everyone in that room had wanted to kill Noam at some point, had a fight with Noam at some point, and still was there. And that really shows you what kind of person he is, because when you get to a point where you know someone and no matter what you have difference. I mean, me and Noam fought a lot, but to be able to be part of his life, to me, it's very special, for me to be there. And I was like, when I looked around the room and I saw all these people been there forever, for 20 years, as I said, and more, it just made me know that this is a right, that, I was right. He's a good man, good friend. So I just want to say that, that observation.
Very, very, very nice of you to say. Thank you very
much. No, but it's true. Don't you guys agree? When you see somebody like, doesn't have, friends for a long time, he's like, this guy like fucked up a lot. But, I know him in a position also, like he owns a comedy club. He's a musician. He's on Cafe Wa. He runs a lot of stuff. So you always have to that fight with him. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're in his band, oh my God, I remember every 5 minutes he used to have a band meeting at the Olive Tree. Olive Tree is above the comedy salon, had a fight with someone. It's like, oh my, and yet all these people were in that birthday party, and just so proud. So Christiana, I wasn't invited to your birthday party, so I have no observation, but
I'm very low-key. I like to retreat into my shell as a Cancer. I don't really do a lot on my birthday, but so I was very much a Cancer and did stuff around my house and went to IKEA and then had
IKEA. Yeah.
Well, I'm not a big believer in Zodiac, but perhaps she's right because that's my normal birthday. This was a 60th birthday party. So,
oh, wow.
Oh my God.
So I allowed myself a little,
that's exciting,
a little celebration, but normally you're right. I didn't want to think about my birthday. I just want to treat it like every other day.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly how I feel.
You definitely don't look 60.
Not in a million years. Yeah, I have the filter on.
I know you don't.
No, wow. He's very athletic too. He's good for him. So all right, so let's start. So a few topics that we're gonna talk about. Let's start with comedy. First of all, Thursday. I'm sure they were at the Cellar before, but Dave Chappelle, the Madison Square Garden, was Kevin Hart's concert, and then Dave Chappelle's, you know, showed up first, and then Chris Rock, and then Kevin Hart. They were at the Cellar before, and then went to the Garden, and they killed it, you know. But what we're gonna talk about is, you know, I don't know if you guys heard, you know, Dave Chappelle got a show canceled at a venue in Minneapolis called First Avenue, and it's a legendary venue where Prince had his Purple Rain and all that, and they canceled the show like I think hours before the show, you know. So and they moved it to another venue. So I want to know your takes on that, especially Noam that owns a place. You know, how much does that was you think is a business decision? And then let's start with Christiana first. What's your take on that?
It's a little extreme. It's very extreme. I understand not wanting to offend, but I also feel like everyone, if you are aware of the type of comedy that Dave Chappelle, you know, the topics that he talks about, and if you don't want to be offended, then I wouldn't buy a ticket. You know, like there are comedians that I don't agree with, that I'm not a fan of, so I don't support them. I don't go to their shows. And I think it's a bit extreme, taking it a little bit too far, to have the potential of someone being offended, preemptively canceling the show, especially so many hours beforehand. Because also you have to think about it, and not maybe if a few individuals complained, but then you have all of these other people who also had plans to see Dave Chappelle. And so I think it's a little concerning, and I hope it doesn't become a trend. Because I mean, also as comedians, I mean, people get offended by so little these days. So I feel like the more that we start to lean into that, the more there are going to be problems if anyone can complain about anything and then feel like the power is in their hands over the comedian, over the venue, over the owners, and over the masses. So it's a little extreme, I think.
And just to be clear, the show was sold out, and they canceled it in that venue, but they moved it to another venue. So the show happened, but it was another, and Chappelle have not commented yet. Seema, what do you think?
I think that this whole trend has been towards less comedy, more political correctness. Everyone is way too sensitive. If I was Christiana, you know, I would be concerned because you're a comedian. This is your livelihood. And, you know, I think it curtails your ability to write jokes, and you're going to have to be overly sensitive as to who is in the audience. But I think people are increasingly losing their sense of humor.
Mm. Noam, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's part of a broader issue, which is difficult, because some things quite offend us. And when we feel sympathy to a particular point of view, it can distort our ability to view it in terms of principle. So for instance, to take the opposite side of the coin, Colin Kaepernick kneeling at the national anthem, right? I had an unpopular opinion on that, which was not related to my feelings about Colin Kaepernick with the national anthem, which is simply that this was too opinion-based, that they shouldn't, of course, have forced him to kneel to stand for the national anthem or do anything. But I thought the proper thing for the team to do was say, listen, if you want to have a political point of view, just stay on the sidelines, don't come out. Because tomorrow, the person who believes in that abortion is killing babies is going to kneel for the national anthem because they don't want to kneel for a country that's killing babies. And the next one is going to be kneeling because they don't want to kneel for a country that aids Israel. And this was just like, why are we going to allow political expression to get its nose under the tent of something that is, you know, you're getting paid to be there to play football. If you don't want to stand for the national anthem, if you're offended by it, by all means, stay in the locker room and then come out during the game. So that was my, and then this is kind of the flip side of it, that if you feel very offended by what Chappelle said about trans, then you're going to be very, very sympathetic to it. Right. But there's a whole, you know, it descends into tit for tat in an unworkable system. So the only, they have to have a thicker skin about these things. So when the head of Iran comes to make a speech after talking, or let's take something more controversial, Louis Farrakhan says that the Jews are, Zionism is a poisonous weed and the Jews are a gutter religion, whatever it is. Would I ever in a minute think that some venue shouldn't let Louis Farrakhan speak? No, of course not. This is, you know, it's too petty. Let people speak and handle, take them on their ideas. And it descends into an unworkable, there's no bottom to it, either in both directions, with the political expression at the football games or the, you know, the censoring political expressions at venues. I mean, I suppose maybe there's some limits. The venue doesn't want to put on Hitler, you know, I guess. But if I had to choose all or none, I would say let the venue put on Hitler. You know, you're not gonna end Hitler by not putting him at a venue. He's gonna get his word out. So maybe it's just better. And this used to be, by the way, I know I'm talking a long time, but what I'm saying is not crazy, because in the 80s, the American Civil Liberties Union was fighting for the right for the Nazis to march, which is basically what I'm saying. You know, they say, listen, let them march. Let them do what they want. So that's my opinion on all this stuff. But just to
to
view it outside, whether you agree or disagree with the particular point of view, to view the Kaepernick thing outside, whether or not you agree with his view of the American, you know, the way African Americans are treated by the police, and view the venue thing outside, whether you agree with Chappelle and trans stuff. So go ahead.
So what I wanted to ask more specifically is, why did they cancel only a few hours? I'm sure they were under certain kind of pressure, you know, not like it will be different if they say, no, we're not going to take, and he performed there before, you know, not going to take it. So something. So, and also for you as a business owner, do you think that you would have to do it at certain point? Like if you have people marching, I know you have a similar situation with Louis C.K. and he really stood up for it. But what if the pressure was even more? Like, is that business decision, you think, at some point?
Well, no, I don't actually think, I don't know. It's hard for me to believe it's a business decision in the sense that anybody would not go to a concert on Sunday if Chappelle played there on a Saturday. I just don't really believe that.
Yeah.
These venues are usually rented out by promoters anyway. I don't think it's a business decision. What I do think it is a peer pressure decision. It's very difficult to be called out on Twitter. It's very difficult if your people around you in your social circle think that you're, you know, harboring bigotry or whatever it is. And people buckle, you know. I felt the pressure when I had Louisville. You know, we had people spitting at my staff members. It's, you know, I don't know if you ever had anybody tweet about you, but just like two people tweet something terrible about you, it feels like the entire world is crumbling around you. It's very, you know, it's totally distorted, but I know what that feels like, and they just have to stay the course.
Yeah. And I think you kind of like Christian also summed it up. If you don't like it, don't go. You know, if you like it, go. And then on the other hand, when you see a show in Madison Square Garden and Kevin Hart and Chris Rock, they show up to support. And that's what I love about the three of them. They just, no matter who have a show, the other two just showed up. And, you know, so I don't know. It's crazy. But it's a crazy world. So something is that the next one is like kind of like a little bit related, which is Bruce Springsteen's concert. You know, one of the things that people were talking about a lot, which happened during the pandemic also with Dave Chappelle, was the price tickets, you know, because he had some price tickets for $4,000 and $5,000. And also Chappelle was under pressure at that time with during COVID, when he was selling tickets for $300 in clubs and in his ranch and stuff like that. People can't afford that. But so what's your take on that? Let's go with Seema.
Well, somebody can afford it. I mean, there are people that can afford it. And, you know, I would never pay it, but some people.
But do you think it's offensive?
Listen, I think there's a lot of things that are offensive, right? Like the Kardashians are offensive. Celebrities are offensive. The entire Bravo network can be offensive. But at the same time, if people, I mean, he is a legend, and he is getting older. So for a lot of people, they're thinking, listen, this may be the last time that I'm going to see Bruce Springsteen on tour, whatever. And if there are people that can afford it, by
see,
all
if
means.
MasterCard put it like that, it would have been, they would sell more. Listen, guys, he's older. This might be the last time. 5,000. Cristiano, what do you think?
I agree. I mean, listen, he's going to retire. Give him a good send off. The man's old. Who knows if he's saved? You know, like, he is a legend. I think that's a problem where people don't understand. Like, he has worked his whole career to the point where it's like, yeah, now if you want to see me at certain places in a venue, it's going to cost $5,000. The article that we read also said that there were tickets for like 60. So
yeah, but this is not him doing it. This is the promoter. Yeah,
of course.
But like, what I'm saying is, like, do you think a price ticket should be, would it be offensive? Should when you put a price ticket for your show, should you be concerned about what's going on with the economy and gas and all that? And or just it's like,
he's
listen,
an entertainer. He's not a politician.
Yeah, I mean, that's not really his business. Also, I just feel like, once again, this is a completely optional thing. So
exactly.
Like, if you want to go to a concert and you have the money to go, some people can't afford Netflix. So it's like, if you have some people might go, I don't have $60 to go to a concert. I used to work in real estate, and there were people would say, like, who's living in these luxury buildings? Like, people with more money than you. That's what
it's yeah.
You know, like, it sucks, but that's capitalism. Like, if you yes. don't have the money to go, I'm sorry. But at the same time, somebody else might be like, fuck it, man. Yeah, I want to be like front row by the boss. There you go. Like, I don't care. I'll pay whatever. People have more money than other people. It sucks, but that's what it is. And like, why are we only talking about it in terms of Bruce Springsteen? Like, that's just capitalism. I don't know. It's how it is.
What do you think?
He's at fault at all, or the promoters? Like, I don't know. People want to get what they pay for what they want. You know, the market's determined. But if the tickets don't sell, then obviously it's insane. But people are paying.
No, but the point is, like, some people were complaining not only about Bruce Springsteen, but you know, about different few artists of the timing of the price of tickets. That's why. Noam, what do you think?
I think in general that everything that is said, I agree with. As we know, it's very difficult to set the price of anything when there's demand for it, that's for at a higher price. So that's how you have black markets, and that's how major economies destroy themselves by trying to set prices, which create, you know, a scarce good. So, you know, in general, I agree with it, and I understand the futility of trying to control. Let's say you kept the price down, so somebody buys them at $60. You think they're going to turn down the $4,000 that someone else is ready to offer them? Are you going to make it illegal to turn as scalping? Like, these things just don't work. It's just no different than drugs. Having said that, you know, it's not nice that a working class person who's like the heart and soul of Bruce Springsteen's following and people he writes about might not be able to afford to see his concert. So you would hope that maybe Bruce himself, who I don't think cares so much about the money at this point in his career, would find some way to set aside some tickets that can be given out in a way that would be, you know, nice for people who can't afford it. But, you know, it's easier said than done. It's just easier.
But for you, you know, I know you for a long time, obviously, with the Comedy Cellar, one of the most popular clubs, and always sold out for weeks ahead of time and all the venues and stuff. And you never raised the prices, and you can. And even when you did, like, through the 20 years that I know, it will be $1 or $2, and you will have like 7,000 meetings, and you'll be very worried about it. So you do care in that sense of, okay, you do have good product to sell. But yet you'll be very careful about raising the prices. So is just a business decision, or you think it's like, I don't think comedy should be more expensive than that?
No, I don't think I care. I think I'm just cautious about raising prices because I want to be a place where people can come regularly, not a place that can only come on a special occasion. I'm probably overcautious. I know when I sold the Cafe Y, I kept the prices Reasonable Decapitoir for many years, and then I sold it, and they raised it pretty significantly after I sold it, and it didn't really slow them down. I probably lost an unthinkable amount of money over the years by not raising my prices. But keeping your prices reasonable is the flip side of hopefully of a certain longevity, and longevity is there's much more money in longevity than in short term things. So you know, who knows? But no, I'm not concerned about keeping comedy affordable for the masses.
All right, Cristiano, we're gonna have a table of this. So when you sell your tickets for $5,000 in the future, I'm gonna play that tape for you again.
I was like, that's capitalism for you. But I think that's a very good point, though, because it's like what you're saying is basically, you know, like it's a concert is a different experience than going to see comedy consistently and running a club consistently. It reminds me of one of my favorite landlords I used to work with. He would say, like, Christiana, when I put apartments on the market, I could price them higher, but I'm thinking about having a stable rent roll. So he's like, I would rather increase, if I have a good tenant, I'd rather keep the apartment affordable. So that way they can stay. I'd rather have that and have a stable rent roll than like price out my tenants and then just keep, you know, pricing out. And then the building becomes a revolving door. And I think that's the way that it's kind of, that's the difference in it though. Like you're thinking about the longevity, but a concert, it's like, you get to see him. He's touring now. We don't know if we're going to tour him again. And then, you know, it's about getting its much maximum value.
Look, it's no different than the Super Bowl. Yeah, you know, prices
right.
are ridiculous, yeah. right? It's just no different. Yeah. It's really Bruce Springsteen concert, the Super Bowl, it's basically exactly the same thing in terms of, you know, entertainment. And people are ready to pay almost everything to get it. And listen, inequality is not nice. To see, especially for something like that. On the other hand, all things considered, it's the better system than the countries that do it differently. That's for sure. So we end up can't have everything.
All right, let's move to the next one. Biden got COVID. He's okay. No worries. But this is one of the articles that was interesting to me. You know, a lot of Trump says that the media totally, Fox News, obviously, it was compared when Trump had COVID than when Biden had COVID. Like when he announced that Trump with no mask versus Biden with no mask, he made a big deal of Trump having no mask, but not Biden. And comparison continues.
Because Trump got COVID October 2020 before there was a freaking vaccine. That's the difference. There was no vaccine. There was no booster. There was nothing in October 2020. So Trump got COVID and it was 5 billion times more transmissible. Now, if Biden doesn't wear a mask, it's because he's been twice vaccinated, twice.
No, they're boosted. Talking about when he announced it, he was in the balcony and same balcony, nobody's around, not wearing a mask. That's what they're saying.
When Trump announced it.
Yes. Versus right, when but Biden I'm saying,
announced it. Right. But, yeah. but when Trump announced it, we were in a world where some people were still locked down and everybody was still going outdoors with a mask. I mean, everybody was wearing a mask everywhere. It was a different world in October 2020.
But so you don't think in general, like, do you agree or disagree with her saying that the media coverage of Biden versus Trump or just at different times?
No. First of all, the media dislikes, and I can say that I'm somewhat still part of the media for a few more days, but the media still dislikes Biden almost as much as they dislike Trump. No one likes Biden. No one likes Trump. Everybody's got their problems with both of them. And I think, again, when Trump took off his mask, it was the wrong message because the message at that time was wear a mask all the time. The message has changed now.
Noam, what do you think?
I mostly agree with what Seema said. I mean, it's very, very sloppy for people not to point out that when Trump had COVID, there was no vaccine and people were dying in high numbers. And now Biden has COVID and nobody really thinks he's going to die because they know he has Paxlovid and he's vaccinated and the people that he might pass it to are vaccinated and have Paxlovid. So, and death numbers are very, very low. So, you know, it's very, it's, you know, it doesn't pass the you want to go like that with your eyes. Come on, you're not, you don't really mean this. There are certain truths that I am sympathetic to where she's sort of coming from, which is, for instance, Biden was coughing. You know, he obviously had symptoms and he didn't follow the CDC guidelines. He probably should have. It's human. I mean, I don't hate the guy for it. We all probably have had symptoms at times and didn't react to them immediately, kind of crossed our fingers and hoped it wasn't COVID, and it wasn't, right? I'd also say that, you know, more people died of COVID under Biden than under Trump. And that's kind of put Seaman's argument on its heel in reverse, because all those people who died while Trump was president died when there was no vaccine. And then Biden had more people die when he did have a vaccine, right? So the media is pretty silent about that. So there's no question that the media in general, I think, looks to be kinder to Biden on these issues than Trump, although you can't really totally blame them because Trump was such an arrogant asshole about it, right? But having said all that, no, I don't think that Lara Trump's criticism is very persuasive to me, no.
Christiana, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's pretty minor, but also in terms of timing, I mean, I feel like Biden is also just starting. He's, you know, kind of just starting. He's like 1 year-ish into his term. So we're kind of also just like, yo, keep this old frail man alive. Where Trump is also kind of exiting. So it's like, all right, okay, whatever. And we're just like all like, hey man, everything's already all fucked up. And last thing we need is to, like, everyone's just like, please, you know, duct tape this man's body together and pump him full of vitamins to just keep him alive, because we're not on the end of the term. Trump, yeah, like, this might be the end of his term. This is like, oh, all right, old man, you know, let's take a seat, relax, let's not stress him out too much, get him too, like, you know, everyone's just kind of like,
what do you have against old people?
Interesting. I mean, I just want to say that it is interesting. So I can imagine a different scenario when, let's say, Biden were president and Hillary were the vice president, right? I think we'd be saying, we hear people like making like off call jokes, like, well, you know, if he goes, it wouldn't be so bad. You know, maybe it's time to let, you know.
That's a really good point.
But
that's,
I think that's
a really good point.
Yeah, what's being telegraphed here in all these comments is that whatever Biden is, we don't want Kamala.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty deep thing going on, because when in 2024, it's, you know, if Biden doesn't run,
ooh,
and then there's a movement to pass by Kamala Harris, given all the fraught, you know, arguments about race and gender and all this stuff. And, you know, it's the Democrats have a potential real problem on the horizon. And how they could just totally get go into an internecine war. Is that how you say it? You know, like, they could really start fighting each other.
Can I just let you do something funny, actually? Not funny, haha. But so I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. Kamala Harris was here the day we found out that Biden had COVID. So all the reporters, I wasn't there. We have a political reporter. And, you know, everybody went to talk to Kamala. And she's trying to talk about the freaking internet, like, to get more internet access, and everyone's trying to talk about Biden having COVID. Like, dude, our president has COVID. Stop talking about the internet. Or, I mean, she did want to talk about the abortion issue, obviously North Carolina and South Carolina a little bit as well. But it was really an interesting optics that she was up there and people wanted to ask those questions, like, you know, what Norm's kind of saying. If something happens to him, we have you here. But it was awkward. It was awkward.
I don't know. It's quite, like, you know, Biden announced he was going to pick a woman of color as vice president. And I, to the life of me, did not know why he didn't pick Susan Rice. I'm sure there was a reason. I'm sure that I don't know what the dirt on Susan Rice is. It didn't come out. But she was so much more qualified. She's so smart, so capable.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it? What was the reason? Because I remember they did. You know,
she must have something in the DL that we don't know.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. Because she they had talks. there were at least like pictures of them talking and, you know, there, but the, I think it was the vetting process. I think something came up with her.
And, you know, there was something else very nice about Susan Rice. I know we're getting off of it, but she has a son who's a Republican. And like a right-wing Republican, her son.
Oh, wow.
Very nice relationship. And she apparently they managed to have a very warm, loving family, despite having these disagreements within the family, which I thought was a wonderful, could have been a wonderful model for America. You know,
agree. You're absolutely right.
That up too. But I, just not to get out of the point, but I think what Norm said earlier about that, you know, the Democrat having a problem, I think I almost 100% certain that the next president is not going to be a Democrat, because there's no one that can, unless we have like a Barack Obama step up all of a sudden that we didn't know about.
Well, leaving aside the political, you know, the inflation, or it might just be unable. But for instance, Amy Klobuchar would be a strong.
No.
She's horrible.
No, you
I
may not like her.
Stand her.
But you're not going to vote for the Republican. But what I'm saying is that for the swing voters, a moderate Midwestern, extremely bright woman like Amy Klobuchar, you would think could beat a creepy Republican, but Kamala Harris will never win. That's for sure.
No, Kamala Harris will not get it. But I don't know about Amy either.
We could talk about Liz Cheney. That'll be a nice transition. Talk about January 6th, because you know she's going for it.
Yeah,
and she may be the person that both people like. I hate her too, by the way. No, a moderate Republican that Democrats may vote for.
Yeah, a Democrat, but she has to get the nomination. She won't.
You guys see the movie
Vice?
Yeah,
yeah. I saw
that was
Vice.
A good movie.
Which movie?
Vice.
Is that the one that the guy from SNL did about Cheney?
Yeah.
No, that was terrible.
Why was it terrible?
I don't remember it as a movie, but it's one of these movies a la Oliver Stone that just presents, you know, demonstrably inaccurate facts and kind of pollutes our view of history. I don't like that. It's fine if it's, you know, if it's
what facts that you did.
Quentin Tarantino being ridiculous. What's that?
What facts did you disagree with that movie?
Oh, like for instance, it's the only one I remember, but they talked about the fairness doctrine being responsible for the rise of Fox News. For some reason, that sticks in my mind, which if you Google it, had nothing to do with it. The fairness doctrine went away because it was based on scarcity of television frequencies before cable.
Okay.
And it had no, it didn't apply to cable TV because there's unlimited channels on cable TV. So it implied this nefarious thing. It's like, and there was many things like that. It's my Adam McKay, that's his name, right? Yeah, I mean, there have been articles written about it. He just, you know, like I said, it's.
But that was only a small fraction of the movie. You know, I thought you, when you say facts.
Well, let me put it to you this way. How bad a villain, in retrospect, could Cheney be if his daughter turns out, and she's very close with her father, surely the father approves of what she's doing. His daughter turns out to be one of the only stalwart Republicans in the country. You know, I mean, they paint this family in such a black and white, good guy, bad guy way. It's just not the way the world works. It's just not, you know, maybe makes a good movie. Real people are not like that. Maybe Hitler was, but Dick Cheney, I'm sure, is not.
I don't know. I think it was very close to a lot of the major facts. And what's interesting is the producers of that movie. It's a lot of Hollywood stars. I know Brad Pitt is producing, George Clooney, I think, is producing that movie. It was a lot of big hitters. I think they wanted to do something. But
except for Lawrence of Arabia, I think most historical portrayals are pretty inaccurate. What do you think? Have you seen that? I'm kidding. I'm actually making a point to you. Like, you know, Lawrence of Arabia portrayed the Arabic world in a very, very...
The one that was really far from the truth is the Steven Spielberg one.
Amistad?
Huh?
Schindler's List?
Yeah. That was far from the truth. That's an inside joke. But
actually, I believe it, in terms of the way it portrayed Oscar Schindler, I think it was actually far. I've heard that it was They did hagiographize him. I don't know what the word is. In that case, it didn't matter because the story is basically true.
But I actually researched that story pretty well, and I found out that actually who helped the most and got most of the credit was his wife. His wife was the one that sold most of the stuff, tried to get not as much as him. You know, like his wife was more than him, but that was not covered in the movie.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah. Everything against women. Unbelievable. All right. Speaking of January 6th, let's move on. First, Steve Bannon. He just said today, you know, that he's willing to go to prison to support Trump after the, you know, after. I mean, how could he get a guy like Steve Bannon now? Like, you think Trump has something on him? Like, what kind of loyalty is this?
Did he say to support Trump?
He said he's willing to go to prison to support Trump after his after he was convicted. Like, he will not go. He said today, he said, if I go to jail, so be it. That's exactly
right. But I don't know. Well, whatever. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I haven't been following it.
Yeah. Seema, what do you think? Well, I must be following this.
Okay. No, I mean, not a lot, because it was a super quick trial, right? The trial started Monday and the verdict came in Friday. He is facing, I think, two years in prison. But he kept saying, like, he's going to put up a fight, and, you know, he talks all big, but they put on no defense, no witnesses, nothing. So, you know, just in terms of common sense, people on juries want two sides of a story. It is very hard to convince a jury to believe you if you present no evidence, nothing, especially in this type of case when it was just so one-sided. You know, did you disobey the court order? Yes. Like, he didn't go. He was supposed to go somewhere. He didn't go there. That's the entire case. Actually, I think the jury.
So do you think it's, you know, I know you're expert in that. Can these charges be dropped if he actually showed up now?
He wouldn't have been charged.
No. I understand that. But
you mean now if he shows up?
Yeah. If he go for the subpoena, because everything that the 2 years is just for not showing up to the subpoena.
Okay. You know? So if he went, the question is, could the conviction be reversed?
Yeah.
I don't think a judge would do that, because then it seems like he's showing up now to get the conviction reversed. What they could do is at least factor it into sentencing. So let's say he's facing 2 years, then maybe if he says, you know what, I've taken it too far, I'm going to go, I'm going to testify, I'm going to cooperate. And then what they could do is give him a non-incarceratory sentence or something much less than the max.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he did what he did. Everybody knew he was going to get convicted. I don't fully understand how it is that they decide who that's guilty of contempt of Congress actually goes on trial and goes to jail for it. So, for instance, Eric Holder was held in contempt of Congress. I remember during Iran-Contra. I mean, during the Fast and Furious thing. Janet Reno was something with that, was something contempt of Congress. I don't remember what it was. Brennan, the former head of CIA, I'm pretty sure was held in contempt of Congress. And these things are usually not pursued by the Justice Department. So,
you're right. You're absolutely right. I think it's like a perjury thing. I think when they want to make an example out of someone, then they pursue charges. I think that there doesn't seem to be an exact science to it. Not like, you stole someone's purse and then you got caught and then you go through the system. But these type of contempt of Congress or contempt in general, as like perjury, I don't see a formula here.
I think the Democrats should just declare victory on this January 6th and end it already. I think the law of diminishing returns has really kicked in here. And I don't even know what they're trying to accomplish anymore. You know, we get it. I think we all get it. Anybody doesn't get it is not going to get it, right?
What about Trump just said yesterday in his speech? Is like, if I would declare that I'm running, they would stop all this.
Oh.
Because I think I don't know what the law is if he's running.
Well, can I ask, Christiana, have you been watching these hearings? I'm so curious to see what your opinion is.
I spend my day steeped in telenovelas and I'm just always trying to improve my Spanish. Telenovelas, terrible reality TV, comedy, and then whatever.
This is reality TV, the January 6th.
You know what it is? All that kind of stuff makes me very, not anxious, but it's just like, I if I'm too inundated in terms of things in politics, then I walk around all day being like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I already feel a little
right.
So then I just feel, I like stay abreast, but I won't actually see.
Exactly. Yeah. I've watched every single minute of everyone. Only because for work. I can't lie, for work and for.
Oh, all right.
And for both. It is both. But Hatem, what were you just saying that Trump said yesterday if he was running or if he was reelected?
If he would announce that he's running, all this would have stopped.
No. I think the Department of Justice is going to arrest him. So he can announce 100%.
That is a good reality show. All right. You know what? I'm sold. I'm in.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not very happy with a lot of people calling for him to go to jail, or I don't know about, like, I see a lot of things happening from the Middle East is happening now, is going after ex-presidents and stuff, regardless of if he's guilty or not. But it's just like, I don't like the fact that we're going after president, just going for every mistake. Because if you looked in the back, since whoever, every president committed a crime.
Yeah, but it's not just, yeah, right. But Nixon would have gone to trial as well, but he quit before that, you know, the chance.
He
got pardoned. No, he got pardoned. But the point is, like, it's not about going after ex-presidents. They're not just going after Trump. They're going after John Eastman, which is one of his advisors, Mark Meadows, chief of staff, Rudy Giuliani. So it is Trump and his inner circle. And
I understand, really not... but it's still going after Trump. And he started it when he said, if I win, you'll be in jail. That's the line.
But it's not going after him. It's presenting there's evidence. Going after someone who murdered.
So you don't think if they went after George W. or after any president, they will, for certain things, they will find him committed some kind of crime? Christiana, go ahead.
I feel like Seema brought up a very good point, though. Like, they're making an example out of him in this situation. I think there's a reason for it, because those people will still, like, at a drop of a hat, try again. You know, maybe they'll be in better shape this time, a little more organized. But I think it is important to make an example, just so people, because otherwise, like, I remember telling people, I'm like, he's not gonna go quietly. I knew that. And just because I've spent time in, like, I spent a lot of time in Cuba, and people will be like, how did this happen? I'm like, because a motherfucker just takes some shit. And I was like, he's not gonna go quietly. And everyone's like, yeah, whatever, Christiana. And then when the insurrection happened, first of all, I was having a little afternoon delight, finished, looked at my phone, and I was like, they're storming the Capitol. But you know, I was like, this is how this happens, though. You know, like, someone just takes some shit, and maybe they try one time, it doesn't work, maybe they try another time and then it works. So I think it's important to make an example, just to let people know that there
is. I'll ask Noam, what do you think now? But I just want to add something to make an example of someone. I agree with you, but don't you think that maybe you should make an example also of a president who went to war and hundreds of millions of people died for no reason from both sides? Go ahead.
I mean, that's hundreds of millions of people? Bread and butter.
No, I'm not talking about Israel. Sorry.
Did you say hundreds of millions of people?
I was referring to Israel. No, I'm sorry. Only 100. Seema's out. Seema, I have enough. No, what do you think, Noam?
I'm going to wait for Seema to come back.
Okay.
Da, 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 da. Text her?
No, she's her connection. I know she'll be right back. So until she gets back, you know,
I'll tell you what I think. But I wanted to get Seema's opinion on what I think. That's why.
So I'll talk until she comes back. Right. I'll add more information to the people. Well, what I'm saying is just I think people should be held accountable. But I think also presidency is you know, it's such a job that, you know, you have a lot of advisors and stuff. And if we start going after presidents, which we should, I'm not saying we shouldn't, but why some people get a free card, you know, and some people don't. That's my point.
He tried to take over. He tried to take it. You know, that's.
This is what I think. I think the Democrats are crazy if they try to prosecute Trump, because if it's not clear that he's guilty of anything. And I'll get back to that point in a second. If they should go after this man and the jury comes back not guilty, forget about it. They supercharge this super villain, like the end of some sort of Marvel movie where he takes the electricity and he, like, you know, they zap him with the electricity and the electricity, and he becomes even more powerful from the electricity. Like, not worth the risk. They don't have him dead to rights on anything. Number one. Number two, this hearing is a one-sided affair. I mean, yet some of the evidence is pretty clear that it's true, but we don't know what's been left out. And we do know that they cut things out. So, for instance, they show us the video of Trump, you know, saying blah, blah, blah. But then they cut out the part where he says, I want you to go peacefully, you know. So, but in a trial, it's only because he can say, but I also said go peacefully. How can you, you know, but let me give you a perfect example of really what I'm talking about. So we talk about this Giuliani thing. We talked about this once a few months ago. You know, you hear people all the time talking about Giuliani, how he said fight and fight and fight. You've heard this thing. And David French has written about it. Let me just read what Giuliani said to just give you a little perfect example of how dishonest some of this is.
Yeah.
Giuliani said, oh, here's Seema.
Yeah, she have difficulty with the weather over there. She's trying to log in.
Giuliani said that. So Giuliani's been criticized for wanting combat. You know, East Business and Giuliani wanted combat. This is what Giuliani said. Over the next 10 days, we get to see the machines that are crooked, the ballots that are fraudulent. And if we are wrong, we will be made fools of. But if we're right, a lot of them will go to jail. Let's have a trial by combat. I'm willing to stake my reputation. The president is willing to stake his reputation on the fact that we're going to find criminality here. It's a matter of scientific proof. We need 2 days to establish that. It would be a shame if that gets established after it's over, wouldn't it be? That's what he said. Now, what kind of diabolical liar needs to take what I just read and claim that he was talking about violence? Like, this is so over the top that you have to, it is only proper to wonder about everything the same person tells you about this evidence. So not all the evidence is available to us. So all of which is to say, I don't think Trump is necessarily innocent, but it's not clear to me he's guilty of a crime. But, and if they should try to convict this man and he gets off free, he's gonna be like, you see, they talked in a good game. I went to trial and I was right. And that's not worth the risk. What are they gonna do? But they put him in jail and you know, it's crazy. Enough.
I think there are, you know, there's several crimes they're looking at. And I do think that we aren't there with, let's say, a seditious conspiracy, because the conspiracy, you know, there's this element of force. And the most important element is the two or more people agreeing to do something with the same purpose. And we're not there yet. We're not there where there's a meeting of the minds between Donald Trump and one of the rioters.
Seema, can I interrupt you for a second? There's so much contradictory evidence, because we're told on the one hand that Eastman and Navarro laid out this long, complex legal procedure plan to get around the electoral count vote or whatever it is. No violence. And yet at the same time, we're told, and the plan was to be violent. But it's so clear from all that Navarro and Eastman memo shit that violence was not part of the plan. This is something that happened. Trump sure didn't do a shit about it as it happened. He was certainly derelict of duty when he didn't pick up the phone, but that's not a crime as far as I know.
Right. Okay. But first of all, when I say seditious conspiracy, what I think the Department of Justice and the committee is looking at is Trump and the two or more people would be the rioters to commit those violence. So what? Now, I don't think they're there.
That's
yet
crazy.
There's no meeting of the minds. However, However, they're also looking at conspiracy to commit fraud. I think there's a few fraud crimes they're looking at, obstruction of a governmental proceeding. That's easy. I mean, there is just no way around that they cannot get Trump on obstruction.
Oh, they absolutely there's a way.
I don't think they're going to get him.
Absolutely.
And how do you not think that?
Because what's the evidence?
What's the evidence? Yeah.
The evidence is that he was trying to overturn the election. He was trying.
Yeah, he had a legal. Vote. He had a legal. Right, but he had a legal. He had a lawyer who advised him that this was a legitimate legal theory.
Not in the end. Not in the end. They have emails. The committee showed emails. John Eastman, in the end, admitted that there was no legal basis for him to overthrow the election or overturn the results.
That may have been after January 6th, but not. I don't know about that, but.
Yes, no, I know about it because there was the January 4th, there was a January 2nd, January 3rd, January
5th. I would say the following.
And the 6th. He knew, he was told, and there were witnesses in the room, that there was no legal basis for this.
Listen, I don't know. I don't know all the details. So you might be, I might be saying, you know, things that are wrong, but it seems to me it is very difficult to criminalize anybody who is trying to avail himself of a legal theory, no matter how unlikely it is.
There is no legal theory.
Hold on, let me give you an example.
There is no legal theory.
The people who fought against segregation for Brown versus Topeka Board of Education, right? They took up a legal theory that was specifically disqualified by the Supreme Court in a previous Supreme Court case. Nobody could imagine that they could turn them into criminals because, listen, you know there's no legal theory. The Supreme Court has ruled against that specifically. How dare you? We're going to put you. You cannot. You can get damages for a bullshit lawsuit civilly. The idea of putting somebody in jail because he contemplated a legal theory, which he never even actually went to court. It's crazy talk. It's not going to happen. It's never happened before.
So what would be the evidence?
To me. Huh?
No, what? I'm asking Seema, what would be the evidence? If you were the prosecutor, what evidence do you have?
We have emails and we have phone conversations and we have witnesses of lawyers that told Donald Trump there is no legal basis.
Let me give an example, Seema. Barack Obama.
Period.
Let me give you an example. Barack Obama, when he ran for office, or no, when he was president, his first term, I think, he said that I can't legalize the dreamers. I'm not a king. Remember he famously said that?
Yes.
And then the lawyers told him the same thing, obviously. And he went to Harvard Law School. He knew what he was talking about. And then he did it. Does anybody think that's criminal?
They changed the law.
He had actually told us, the American people, I don't have the right to do this.
But then he did.
And then he did it.
The law changed.
And then the Supreme Court
overturned the election.
Wait, then he did it. Then Obama did it. And then the Supreme Court overruled him because he was right all along. It was illegal. But nobody would ever say it was criminal for him to take a stab at the theory of the law.
But it is criminal to interfere with a governmental process.
How did he interfere with the governmental process? I'm asking. So I don't know. I'm really not up on the facts here.
Okay.
How did he interfere with the governmental process? He tried to get Pence to do it. Pence didn't do it.
That's it.
Right, but he didn't.
That's obstruction. That's obstruction, is telling people to overturn the election.
What he told Pence was, I don't think you should certify. I believe the Electoral Count Act allows you discretion not to do this if you have a basis, blah blah blah. So and I think that we do this. So we'll send
he was telling people to go to the Capitol. I'll see you there, my people.
Right, but he said go peacefully.
That's fine, but to do what? To interfere?
To protest?
No, to overturn the results.
No, people can't.
That is what he's telling people to do.
How do the people?
Telling people to interfere with the governmental process.
How
that's obstruction.
Well, if you can prove that he wanted the people to storm the Capitol.
No, you don't need to prove storming. That's the point. You just have to prove. Here's the thing. We're not at seditious conspiracy because there is not enough proof that Donald Trump incited a riot. There's not enough proof that he had a meeting of the minds with two or more people to overthrow the government or a proceeding by force. Agreed. But there is absolutely proof that he incited people to overturn the election results, that he told people to do this. He told people, you just do what I want and I'll figure out how to make
it. Listen, you're making out a good moral case here that I actually agree with.
No, it's not a moral case. It's a legal case.
No, I don't see the legal case. I think the legal case.
Well, go look at the emails. They're all on the committee website.
Well,
I'm not saying the legal case is ridiculous. I'm not saying there's nothing there. I'm saying it's very tough. And I think there's.
This is why. Okay, I'm just
saying. Hold on, let me finish. I think there's defenses that haven't been raised yet. And I think that if we knew when it was that the Dobbs decision was being decided, and somebody called, I want you to go in front of the Supreme Court and scream and yell bloody murder peacefully to try to prevent them from to let them know how you feel about the Supreme Court case you're about to think, so they don't decide it that way. Nobody would think that's criminal. I just don't. I think that I said before, it depends. Okay,
but also, it wasn't just it wasn't just him telling people who gathered to protest or rally, but it was also his methodical and repeated instruction to the White House staff to not accept the results of the election.
Yeah, I think.
And by the way, I'm just saying and if you look at what's happened since, the fact that the DOJ, the FBI went and took John Eastman's phone when he was, I guess, having dinner with his wife at a restaurant. The fact that a judge agreed to that, to take that evidence and search it, that means they're looking for something there between him and Trump.
I'm happy you said that, because this is precisely my point. All of a sudden, liberals, because they hate Trump, are saying things that they would never say. Normally, if I said, the police broke down into that black guy's apartment, so he's probably guilty. They must have really thought this is not because the DOJ got a warrant and got somebody's phone. That's not evidence of guilt.
You understand how hard it is.
That's evidence that they're after him.
No, you got a judge to sign that. And by the way,
judges sign stuff all the time.
Not
yeah. Well, I think it's gonna go down to this. It's gonna be a bet. We're gonna invite you back here, Seema. And if Trump is convicted, me and Noam gonna publicly apologize for you.
But if they don't, and we're never wrong.
You mean arrest?
Let me just say, I don't really know all the facts to really.
I do. I'm a lawyer.
Legal facts and the law and the statutes. I mean, there's a lot. It's the kind of thing where the devil is really in the details here. And, a little information can be a very bad thing in this kind of thing. I do want to say, however, that my larger point, that the risk of him getting off and what that would do to invigorate Trump, they really have to think 10 times whether it's worth that risk. They are 100% sure they're going to convict him. Otherwise,
Merrick Garland does not care about the politics.
But they ought to.
Why should he? Why should America care about that?
No, he's not supposed to. But I'm saying, like, the Democrats that are calling for this, I'm afraid they're not thinking it through. They got him on the ropes.
I know, but it's up to Merrick Garland. This is totally separate. He doesn't care about the politics. He cares about
we'll get there. But
don't be so sure. January 6th is January 6th.
We'll see in a few months.
Everybody was sure Bill Barr cared only about politics, right? But I mean, one of the interesting stories about the Trump thing, one of the, I think, nicer stories, if anybody wants to, breathe and think about what's really going on, is that these villains, I put them, in quotes, that we, Pence, Barr, what's her name? The education secretary,
Betsy DeVos,
yeah. These people who were on the FBI, Democrat FBI list of the worst people in the world, none of them spent even 10 seconds encouraging Trump on this stuff. All of them, Barr's like, this is bullshit. I don't want any part of it. Bessie DeVos is like, I'm out of here. I resign. Pence is like, I'm ready to, they can say hang Mike Pence. I'm not doing it, you know? And I'm on the ballot, by the way, you know, I'd like to be vice president for four more years. So it's just interesting how, again, it goes back to the Cheney thing. These people are never quite the villains that we assumed they were. And Barr was never quite as political as we assumed he was. And, you know, the right thinks that Merrick Garland is a totally cynical politician, and he's probably not either. There's a lot of good people on both sides in politics, a lot of patriotic people. They fight tooth and nail. Very, very, very few of them are of the type like Trump, who's ready to burn down the house to get rid of the cockroaches, as they say. Most of them will take it to the point of, you know, really fighting hard, and then they'll respect the procedures in the end. And this is basically the reason I am not direly worried about the American democracy. I don't say it's ridiculous that it could get worse than this, but I think Trump is kind of a singular outlier of evil or of narcissism or whatever you want to say he is. I don't expect we're going to see his likes again. I think we should all be take a good lesson from the fact that the people all around him that we thought were so terrible didn't even flirt with it, right? They didn't, not even for a half a second did Bill Barr look at it. He's like, this is bullshit. I'm out of here. And so it's really, things are not as bad as
yeah. I think the last 10-minute debate, I got so stressed out, I just bought tickets for $5,000 for Bruce Springsteen.
I was going to say, this is why I stick to my telenovelas. Wow.
No, but, you know, we shall see how it ends. But it is a reality show for sure. All right. Well, guys, this was awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that was good. He's a good guest, Hatem. He's a good guest.
We always have good guests.
Better than usual.
We always have good guests. Except the, you know, the Jewish ones. All right, you want to share your information where people can find you? And oh, and we didn't talk about that Biden had COVID and he just came back from Israel and Saudi Arabia, you know? So now,
if you want to end on a nice anti-Semitic comment, I'll do you the pleasure.
Okay? All right, go ahead.
When the headline came up on my feed that upstate New York had the first case of polio in 50 years.
It's funny already.
I know it's going to be one of my people. I know. And sure enough, it was.
That's a good one. There you go.
Oh, this is true.
But it's funny when he went there, because the protocol was to bump fist when they get, and he forgot. You know, he will bump fist the first one in Israel and then shake hands with the rest of the people. I totally forgot. So funny.
It was pathetic. And I can't say he had many options to see Obama fist bumping the guy responsible for that journalist being chainsawed to death. And it does show you what happens when you get out over your skis judging people when things are not so fucking easy when you're the guy in the chair. Like I used to say, Senator Obama would not have approved of the things that President Obama found that he had to do, you know. And this is a lesson in all aspects of life, to not be so judgmental. Things are not so easy. Anyway.
So you see the Israeli singer that didn't shake his hand?
What's that?
The Israeli singer that didn't shake his hand?
Oh, I don't know about this.
Oh, you should see that video. It's very interesting.
You wouldn't shake a Biden's hand?
Biden's hand, yeah.
Why not?
I don't know. But it's a good video. I think it's a political thing.
Just didn't want to shake the president's hand. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Seema, do you want to share your information where people can find you and all that?
Oh, I'm only on Twitter at Seema Iyer ESQ. Thank you for
I'm
going to
talk about the new job soon, hopefully.
ESQ, you're a lawyer?
Yeah.
I didn't realize you're a lawyer. I went to law school too.
I know that.
Oh.
I pay attention.
Yeah, but I haven't looked at a law book since 1987.
She was the one representing. Remember the Bronx shooting long time ago? Remember that? The cops. What was it that you were present? The Bronx, was it in the Bronx? The cops, the NYPD.
I was a prosecutor in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me just ask you before we continue the show. What do you think about these two cases happening here? One is that the guy who attacked Zeldin gets out without spending a night in jail, and that even more disturbing to me, this store owner defending himself or employee gets charged with with murder.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, I know about that case.
So I am a New York lawyer. I am moving back to New York, but I cover national legal.
Google bodega owner charged with murder.
Okay.
I definitely and Zeldin too. The bodega
that was the neighborhood, Zeldin. Christian.
A little. I live in Harlem. It was a different part of Harlem, but I was. It's pretty gruesome. I don't know why they're charging him with murder.
I was very, surprisingly to some people, I was very sympathetic to this bail reform because people are innocent until proven guilty. And I knew, like, a musician who was working for me got pulled over, his insurance was expired, and would spend two nights in jail with bad people in the fucking prison, like good people being stuck. And I'm like, this is crazy. You can't, why? So I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of sympathetic to this bail reform. And then a guy comes at a congressman with a blade or whatever it is, and he gets caught in the act, and he doesn't even spend the night in jail. I'm like, can't you find the middle ground here in New York?
Oh, well, that's insane. Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, it's like, there's a difference between violent criminals being turned loose and people with the right paperwork being spending the night in a weekend.
Oh, 100%. It's a complete mess. But the video, you can see that he was attacked by...
Yes.
He was clearly attacked, and he's older, and, you know, things are, listen, bodega owners, obviously doing comedy, like, bodega owners go through a lot. I see what they go through when I'm just trying to get a terrible meal and then go home and sleep, but, you know, people are violent with them at times, and he was clearly defending himself, and it was also clearly, you know, he had a verbal altercation with a woman, and then she went and got the guy. So I mean, obviously, he didn't come to just be like, "Hey, man, let's do some problem solving." You know, like, he came in with an aggressive attitude and attacked him.
No, it's crazy. I mean, I have people who work for me. I I can just imagine, like, Steve King or whatever this guy's working for me, you know, trying to defend the place in some way, then feeling, you know, and then, God forbid, killing somebody who's attacking them, and then being charged with murder. It's wrong. It's just wrong. Anyway, I gotta go. Bye. Bye.
Christiana, what about you? Want to share information with people?
I'm on Twitter and on Instagram, Incomparable MSC.
There you go. All right, guys. Thank you very much.
Christiana, I'm gonna get your contact because I want to see you out. I want to see your
That'd be great. Porn.
So is your email, Hot Tim, is her email on the thing that you sent us out last night?
I'll send it to you right after this.
Okay,
let me just stop recording.
I'll come to see you out, okay?
Oh, thank you. I would love to see you prosecute one day.